Ship of Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave, Stateful Rupert, and with me is Chris Async Awake Coyer. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I think that's the last word you said. So I just called you the last word you said to me.
Yeah, how are you? Yeah, I could hear your brain querying for data there, and it grabbed the first thing off the top. You did like a here's a pop quiz. Ooh, I think I give you the answer in the title of the question. What's the API that grabs the first thing from an array? Unless it's not pop. Isn't pop the last thing in an array?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I think it's probably. Shift. Shift maybe if is
only,
the first thing.
If only we had somebody to teach us a few things about JavaScript, the programming language, Chris.
We have a fabulous show for you. We have a guest who focuses on all kinds of things JavaScript and with a particular focus on React. It's Tyler McGinnis. Hey, Tyler, how you doing?
Hello. I am so good. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for being on the show. I've been trying to make this happen for a while. I'm glad we got it done. In fact, it was back in the day when we were doing that kind of like thinking like a front end developer kind of thing and having big, good names from the different big JavaScript libraries. React, gosh dang it, is the biggest one out there. And you are quite an evangelist for it. And in kind of from a training perspective, right? Like learn React. You've kind of found a niche there, right?
Yeah, I just kind of think of myself as like a teacher, and that's kind of what I go with. So like all my bios and everything, I just put like teacher because it's like simple and it's really like what I do. Just what I happen to teach is like React and JavaScript stuff. But I love teaching, love React, love JavaScript. And so, yeah, that's pretty much like that's who I am, I guess, fundamentally. Yeah. So for good and for bad, so.
And how long? Kind of, I think that's kind of curious. I bet a lot of people look at you and your life and what you do and be like, okay, so that's all he does. Somehow he made it to be like his whole career. Is it your whole career? Do you like dabble in any client work or do you?
I know. I'm full time. Yeah, teaching and writing. So
what were you doing right before that? Right before the leap to full time?
Right before. So I was working on a startup that was building a React Native app, actually. And we were building like a community for cancer patients to be able to better like communicate about their, about cancer, right? So doing that right before that, I was actually teaching. So I've had a weird career where it's like jumping between teaching and like building stuff.
And were you kind of building it as you went though? Like doing some teaching along the way, doing a little bit of because it takes like, not only your ability to teach, but like a heaping helping of like personal entrepreneurialism to make this happen. So it was a building along the way.
Pretty much. So I'll give you the full timeline. So in a quick way that doesn't take up this whole show. So so I was working at a company here in Utah doing like just normal dev stuff. There was a boot camp. This was at the time 2015 when boot camps were like starting to become a thing called Dev Mountain. And the CEO approached me and he's like, hey, do you have any interest in teaching? Like, do you want to do it like part-time for us for our night programs? And I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds like fun. I really enjoy teaching. So started doing that, really loved it. Ended up joining them full-time. So I was there for about a year doing just like full-time teaching. And at that point—
Was that your first intro to like what building a curriculum is like?
And exactly. Yeah. The whole, all of the little details you don't really think of until like you have to do it. So doing that, really loving it, really loving the idea of just like working with and seeing students go from like not knowing anything to like being able to build stuff and then getting a job and then like changing their life. It was super fulfilling for me. So did that for about a year and then actually had former students who went through the program. They got into TechStars with this, again, this idea of building a community for cancer patients. And I was like, well, that also sounds very fulfilling. And it would get me out of teaching and into more of like building something, which I really enjoy as well. So did that, went to London, went through TechStars, which is kind of like a startup accelerator kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Did that. So then about 6 months to a year later, the startup was like going okay. Communities are really hard. And like with startups, you like need money and stuff, which is wasn't my concern, but it was like the business's concern, right? So could kind of see the writing on the wall where it wasn't really going to work out. But I still kind of had the background from Dev Mountain of teaching. And so I started just like writing blog posts. And at the time too, I was doing Egghead stuff. So what was great about them is they really, because that's like all they do, they're really good at like, hey, this is how to make an effective screencast. And this is like how you teach people. Cause like teaching people in person is just so different than teaching people like on a screencast where you have like no feedback, right? So started doing the AKED stuff. And then I was like, hey, like I still love teaching. I might as well try to do this like on my own. So that's kind of when I launched my own thing. And then slowly started rolling down the startup stuff, started like rolling up my stuff. And been doing that ever since.
Yeah, I guess that's what I expected, but it's kind of nice to hear and share with anybody out there who's interested in this kind of thing. You know, like this, it's not an overnight thing. It's not necessarily a leap of faith. It's a sprinkling of knowledge gained from all kinds of different experiences and like slow ramping down and slow ramping up. You know, that's almost always the story.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's the same. I mean, if I were to think of like anybody or like any company in the space doing it super well, it's like it's CSS Tricks, right? With the content game. I think it really is. The content is just such a long play. And it's like,
maybe
I'm just
it's grass is always greener, but I envy what you're doing. What I always point to is like what I want sometimes, and I do this in other areas too, but if you're just comparing CSS Tricks to something like you and what you do, you have such clear calls to action. You got a thing to sell and you sell it, which is great. So I even see stuff like I don't know, Dave has notes in here about your like 60-second dev tips on Instagram. And that, of course, got me and Dave talking forever. Instead of planning this episode, we talked about Instagram forever. Why Instagram? But to me, it's like more clear. It's like, well, you have something to sell. So to me, I'm like, Tyler should be everywhere and everywhere spreading the message, because you can always point back to this place where you got something to sell.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, and what's nice about it is there's like, I mean, it's the same with any software, but like I have no marginal cost of reproduction. So like acquiring students, like I can get a billion students or like one, and like the overhead for me stays the same, which is really nice. That's more right. Of like, this isn't a business podcast, but like that's
right.
That's
that economics of scale there is amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's why startups are so juicy for VC at all, is because the scaling cost for things is compared to like, I don't know, producing leather chairs or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or just I actually have friends who are in like the leather wallet business. And it's just like just a completely different, they're worried about like obviously like margins and things like that. And I'm just like, I just like write blog posts and like teach people and it works out well. So
sure. And then we do have some interesting scaling issues, but in the grand scheme of things, they're much, much more chill. So, you know, the URL is your name, tylermcginnis.com. You know, you got courses there. There's a blog there. There's a newsletter, all this kind of classic stuff, which is cool because it seems like generationally that hasn't changed ever. Like, it's not like it's all of a sudden it's stupid to have a blog, you know? Nope. Turns out that's always been a good idea. And you do that and are pretty effective at it, even tackling some of the, I don't know, the biggest stuff. I mean, how many articles do you think were written about React hooks since they dropped? 20 yeah. million, billion, zillion of them?
A billion. And yeah, I took the approach with that of like, I don't want to write anything until like, one, I like understand the problem they're solving. And two, like everything's kind of flushed out. That was kind of the brand. And this is interesting, diving kind of into React stuff where the React team, they're almost like a PR firm, because they have to have the approach of like, hey, like we obviously spent a ton of time doing hooks and like we think this is the future, but like we also think classes are fine. And like if you're using classes, like don't panic, right? So it's like,
seems like they were pretty careful about that message. That went
yeah.
okay.
Yeah. But now what I'm hearing is like I spoke at a conference a few weeks ago or like a month ago now, and the whole talk I gave was like why React hooks are important and like why they're nice. And there was just so many people, I think, throughout the community where it's like, I think people just like to have like strong opinions about things. So like some people love hooks and some people hate them. And so it's like, it's a weird, React is in a weird spot right now where I don't think the adoption has been like quite as, I don't want to speak for the React team, obviously, but like I've seen people who are like or I've talked to a lot of people who are like, my team lead won't let us use hooks for like various reasons. I don't know, but I wonder if that's the like, because the React team had such a soft approach, right? It is weird.
Well, I liked I felt a lot of comfort with their message in that I just don't have time to refactor all of our components.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah.
But we're all in at CodePen, which is my biggest React code base, you know, which is pretty large, lots of components. We only write in function components now. I've totally double, triple down on hooks. Love it. Love the approach. So good, I think. But it doesn't matter. it's they coexist along with all those class components, and big deal. I don't even necessarily rewrite them when I touch them. I'm like, oh, whatever. You know, if there was a major rewrite, maybe, but for the most part, they're fine, you know? So I feel comfort in that's nice. Although it does make me think, like, what's going to happen going forward? And if you're telling me, you know, I don't know, it's almost like there's enough backlash that do classes eventually, a year from now, 2 years from now, become like second class citizens in React's eye?
Well, it would officially be the class that imported the other class or extends the other class. That would be the second class.
I wasn't trying to make a joke, but yes, I get
that. Okay. Nice. So again, without speaking for the React team, I think the inevitable is kind of like prop types were like built into React and like, they were great. And then it was like, hey, we're taking prop types out of React and we're putting it into its own package. And mm-hmm. same thing with the create class. Like we've kind of seen this before where create class was built into React. And then it was like, hey, mm-hmm. we're going to make it its own package. So it doesn't necessarily kill it. It's just like, if you want to extend react.component, like that thing comes from its own package. That's what I would guess. It makes the most sense. When is the question? I don't know.
Years.
Yeah, a long time, probably, hopefully. So we'll see. But I mean, hooks are fantastic. I still kind of like the old way of writing classes too. Like, I don't know. I try to not be opinionated about writing software.
The one that always gets me is like, cause I'm, you know, like my opinion matters here, who cares? But like the, the component did mount versus use effect with like an empty array to make sure it only runs once because you're Ajaxing stuff. I'm like, whoa, one of those is way more clear than the other one. So
sure. Yeah,
sorry.
Totally,
like
totally.
It's not that I dislike use effect, whatever. It's fine. I guess you can do all the stuff there. And it keeps, you know, function component, which I absolutely want because hooks are great, because this is easier, because it just looks nicer to me. I just prefer it. But some of those APIs, it's a trade-off. They're just not as good.
And the thing with hooks is it's like anything, right? Where it's like, we have a new thing. And like, at first it's like a little confusing as we like work out the details of it. And so I have a rule where I like, don't tweet about anything until like after like 2 weeks of using it at least. Cause like, I think in the early days, you just get so many like, why is this weird thing happening? And like, yeah, it's a total trade-off. Use effect is like, it's fantastic, but there's so many just like weird, like when you're having like timers or like timeouts in it, it just gets a little bit weird. And so like, obviously all those problems go away as like you dive deeper into like the whys and like the specifically like the details of it, but like still like, yeah, the just looking at it, like a 5 minute impression of component did mount is so much more easier than like use effect. Use effect just has some like hairy edge cases to it, so I don't know.
Can we take a slight timeout and like define use effect? Because I think I saw use state first, right? And
yep.
This makes sense. It's like const, and then you have an array, like a destructury kind of array, and you have like count and set count, right?
Yeah, yeah. Clear as day, isn't it? What a nice API. So love it.
State returns a variable and a function to update that variable, right?
Yep. Yep.
A variable and then a function to update that variable. But then there's all these others like use reducer, which I assume connects to some kind of reducing mechanism, but then like use effect. I'm like, ooh, okay. And then they're kind of like, oh, it replaces component did update and component should update and component.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, wait, you know, like,
sure.
Like those were kind of useful. So like what, I guess.
All right. I'll give you my TLDRs. We'll have a little game show, speaking of game shows. I'll try to do this off the cuff. We'll see how it works. So if use state, as you said, allows you to add state to a function component and update that state.
And can I say that that's React gave us that one. Like that's a, hey, thanks, yes. React. Thanks for this hook that you gave us. But there's also this concept that hooks is not necessarily only ones that they give us. And I think that's kind of an important distinction, because it's like, as soon as you like really dig into this, like we use more of our own hooks than provided ones in a way. But anyway, go on. I've already killed your TLDR. So
You're good. No worries. So there are kind of like React primitives, I guess you could say, which are like the built-in hooks. And then you could build your own custom hooks. So there's use state, allows you to add state to a function component. Use effect. So a lot of people talk about how that one, you like do Ajax requests and everything. The way I like to frame it is like, just as the name implies, it allows you to add side effects to your function components. So even if it's like, I mean, just any side effect, right? Whether it's like manipulating the DOM or like changing the document title or making an AJAX request, I've seen that. Or like, I feel like if we describe it that way, it basically just sets like a foundation and makes it a lot more clearer for like things that go in it. So I actually don't, I'm not a big fan of the like, let's look at hooks as a way to replace the old way that we did things. I get like the mental model for that, but like to me, it's so different that I try not to make comparisons between like the old way and the new way, just because like there's so many weird edge cases. You have to. You 100% have to.
In the early days, exactly. You kind of had no choice, though. Like, my gosh, you can't pull away some major API like that and not tell people how to replace it.
Anyway. 100%. But what I found, at least for me, because like with me too, is like I have students who like have been doing React for like 3 years, and I have students who are like, this is their brand new thing to React. So if I just start assuming and making comparisons between the old way, now all of a sudden I set like a prerequisite that you have to know the old way, right? It probably is good, but like, anyway, so use effect allows you to add side effects to function components. Use reducer, the sales pitch for that, from what I've seen, is it basically is the same as use state, except it allows you to use like the reducer pattern for updating that state. The reducer pattern being like array.reduce, that same idea. Those are probably the big three. There's like other ones. I'm sure there's some we're obviously forgetting.
To me, the third party ones are so much cooler. Like use dimensions is so nice for doing dumb stuff. My favorite hook of all time is Apollo's pretty brand newish use query hook, which is just kicks ass. You know, like it used to be you have to have a query component and then it uses weird render props and you have to deal with the state that comes back from those to render different things. And now it's just like, let data equals use query. Here's the query. And then it, you know, I mean, it's mouth blogging the API, but it's like 5x cleaner than it used to be.
I think it brings up a good point where it's like, I think the marketing pitch for hooks was that you're able to add state inside of function components. And it was like, oh, like life cycles are gone and like set state is gone. We can just add state. But I think in reality, it's much more of what you're talking about, Chris, where it's like you can create your own custom hooks, which helps with code reuse. It helps with composition. There's like better defaults. So I think to me, and that's really the conference talk I gave a few weeks ago, was about that, where it's like hooks are cool because, yeah, you can add like side effects and state. But like to me, like the much more interesting thing is this idea of custom hooks and using those to solve a lot of the issues that we saw with like the class API.
So. And then the grand irony of that is like when you're writing your own hooks, they're just like functions that return stuff. So you're like, oh, you invented functions, you know, like we definitely had those before.
It is impressive where it's like the React team had all of these like constraints, right? Where, okay, you have to have state. We have to replace life cycles. We have to make sure everything can happen inside of a function. We need to be able to share like non-visual logic, like, which is what previously higher order components or render props did. And we need to do all of this in like a very like clean and elegant manner. And that's what I love about hooks is it's a very like pretty simple solution to underneath what was like a pretty complicated problem. And we need to do all that without actually like having too many breaking changes and like freaking out the community. So anyway, that's why I love hooks really.
So this use keyword is sort of just like a convention.
Convention. Right? Like, totally is.
Yeah.
It's a, hey, this is going to get executed and it kind of does a thing. So like use state is like, I'm going to create a little state object, dealy mabob, and use effect is like, I'm going to just run some code at some point. It's sort of, you know, but the convention is like this use something or.
Yeah. It is a convention food, and there's some rules too, though, right? Like they have to be called as like a direct child of the function component. You can't like bury them in weird places.
I was gonna say I know the React team released the ESLint plugin React Hooks, right?
Yeah, we just upgraded to that just like yesterday. Rachel did it on our team, and we had like 14-15 little blunders, but we'll just get them fixed up. You know, they weren't killing.
Were they all in use effect?
I think some of them were, and it was that one that I just described where we ended up calling the hook somewhere that wasn't a direct child, and for some reason that it doesn't blow up. I say child, I don't think that's the right terminology, but you know what I mean,
like
right?
Nested, Yeah.
Like, yeah, you can't like call a function that then calls the hook or whatever.
Yeah. Or like it can't be conditional basically as well.
Right.
Oh, weird. It's because I've heard it's kind of notoriously like a cop. Like it's pretty like rulesy, to say the least, maybe. Like is that like a product of like hooks being hard to understand, or are they, maybe in your work, are they like that difficult to teach? Like we have to like lint some rules about how to use them?
Yeah. It's the way they're pitching it is it's like it has its constraints, right? And behind the scenes, and this is where I'm kind of out of my element. But from my understanding, hooks use like array call order to decide which like value is associated with which hook. And so when you start having conditional hooks or like nested hooks that like may or may not get called, then it screws up the order, right? So to circumvent that, they came out with an ES, like a plugin, as you just mentioned. Whether that's like the best solution or not, again, I don't have opinions on these things. I just teach them. But that's the reality of it. So,
this episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by something really cool. It's an alternative to .com. It's the .design domain name. In general, I'm a big fan of interesting, unique, good URL website names, and especially alternatives to .com. So if you're a designer and you've thought of a sweet name for your website and it isn't available under .com, check out .design. Chances are the domain name you want is waiting for you. You can head over to porkbun.com and use the coupon code SHOPTALK on the checkout page to get your free .design domain name for your website. And yes, you heard that correctly. It's a free year if you go to porkbun.com and use the coupon code SHOPTALK on the checkout page and get a free year of a .design domain name that's bundled with free email hosting, Whois privacy, and SSL certificates. I don't really consider myself a designer, but I didn't want to miss out on the fun of registering a .design domain name, so I registered iPodcastBecauseICan't.design, which you can go check out and see how it worked. But there's plenty of fancy companies using .design, like Airbnb.design, Facebook.design, Uber.design, and Adobe.design, and many more. It's exactly the same, just a domain name. Google doesn't care, and it functions the same way as a .com or .org. It just looks a little more interesting. So go check out porkbun.com and use coupon code SHOPTALK at checkout to get a free year of a .design domain name. Our thanks to Porkbun for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
So to circle all the way back, we started talking about hooks forever because you have a pretty good blog post from earlier this year about React hooks. And it's, you know, of the 10 million, billion, thousand of them out there, it's you did a damn good job with it. So
thank you.
I hope it does good for you and stuff. But that, what do you think about when you write an article like that? You're like, I like to share knowledge. I'm a teacher. I'm going to do this thing, but I'm also going to, you know, like what, attempt to knock it out of the park so it gets a lot of traffic because I have something to sell.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think that's what's interesting about like the SEO game is, and it's just what's nice about just like the way I write articles where I try to is just like spend a stupid amount of time researching and like writing the article and I treat it like I'm like an author, right? And I think the good parts of that is typically I come away with like pretty good articles and it kind of cuts through all the noise of the rest of the articles. As you mentioned, there was like I didn't publish this article until, I don't know, like late July. Hooks, I don't know when Hooks came out, but it definitely wasn't anywhere close to that. And so, yeah, to me, I try to just like not rush articles. I try to make just like a really good one rather than a really quick one. And so I don't know. That's my approach is like, I found that if I just hit my head against the wall for like a stupid amount of time, I usually get pretty decent articles coming out of it. So,
and then you kind of do some other things. Like, what are all the, like, do you think of them as, I don't know, I'm trying to articulate this in a way, like you have the blog and you sell some stuff on your URL, but you've got a newsletter and you got a YouTube channel and you got an Instagram and you got a Twitter and who knows what else you got, you know, like how do you think about and reconcile all that?
Yeah, that's it's something I think a lot about because what's interesting. So again, if I'm claiming that I'm like an educator, right? That's like my main title, which is what I feel pretty comfortable with. Then the way I have to treat all of those platforms, like is they're different and the content on those platforms needs to be different because just like the medium is different, right? Like a 60-second Instagram video is very different than like a 45-minute YouTube video. And so that's kind of what I like about it is it's always like to me, I'm super long-winded, as you could probably tell from this podcast. I like writing just very long, in-depth blog posts and videos. And so like Instagram, it's so interesting because like you literally just can't do that, right? So it's mostly, one, it's nice from like a business perspective just because you're kind of everywhere. But two, even from like an education standpoint, it's interesting just because like the medium is the message. And so you kind of have to teach towards the medium. So
I think it's kind of cool. I just started one that's, I'm like getting my bearings about me and on how it works and what the tooling is and stuff. Cause it's tricky, you know? And then it kind of, yeah, I like how it kind of forces you to think about like, how can I make this like the most digestible little nugget of content I possibly can, you know?
Yeah.
And more importantly, like, I don't want to be doing this just to be doing it. I'm like too old for that. <You know>? I want to make sure there's some reason for it. Anyway, that's kind of cool. So, Dave, you know, before we like move away from hooks, you're kind of, I had some thoughts about, I don't know, functional programming. And
so there's this website, Twitter. I don't know if you've seen it.
I think I stopped looking at that in 2012. I think as
That's good. Good. Cause it is just a hell rectangle, but there's like kind of a small debate, I guess, going on about kind of this idea around UI is a function of state. And Rich Harris from Svelte instigated this, but it's kind of his fault. But he was asked to speak about Svelte at a React meetup, so whatever. That's but he posted a good presentation. It's kind of been spinning me out on a few rabbit holes. But he his idea there is maybe like this idea of like purely functional components, like purely functional UI, and maybe like is a bit naive, maybe just because and React definitely has, it seems like is heading kind of towards this more functional thing, that the your component is a function. It's not a class anymore. It's a function. And then that function just has these, you know, use state. It has states in there. But his kind of thing is like you kind of still need a life cycle, which is kind of what the class syntax added. You know, I guess, do you have any thoughts on this? Like, you know, UI is a function of state only, or it like is the React ideal there too pure? Or do you see any potential drawbacks of like going down like a purely functional UI path?
Yeah, good question. So there are a few people who, when they like talk or when they say something, you kind of just like listen because you know they're going to say something smart. Rich is one of those people.
Chris Coyer. So he's so
Chris
smart.
Coyer and Dave Rupert. Really, yeah, the whole crew. So
I know
so
what you mean though. Rich is one of those type of people, isn't he?
And like I will not publicly ever say anything that Rich will disagree with because he's smarter than I am and he will beat me, right? So that's like the mentality that I have. I haven't watched that presentation that he gave, but even with Svelte, like I've heard that like the new thing and everyone loves it. Again, with me, like I really enjoy hooks. I'm sure there are some trade-offs that like people like Rich think about because like they're kind of on another level of thinking than I am. But again, I just like, I like hooks. I've enjoyed it. I'm sure there are trade-offs. I haven't really faced those in the apps that I've written. But if someone as smart as Rich is like waving the flag saying, hey, like we should be paying attention to this, I think there's a very good chance that he's right. And so, yeah, I think, I don't know, should listen to
that's him. Where I'm at too. I'm like, oh my God, you know, sometimes smart people just need to like solve stuff for us and then we can slowly smurf our way there. But at the moment, I'm starting to feel more and more like muscle memory around React stuff because I haven't been writing it forever. And I, you know, but now I, you know, more and more, and it's the only major JavaScript framework where I have any kind of depth of experience at all. And I'm starting to just feel like I like these little angle brackets. I like the JSX land. I like smashing props around. Props are fine, you know. Like I have finally grokked all this state crap and the different ways that I can handle it. And it's starting to just feel like a nice way to build UIs. And that the fact that I can like just arbitrarily choose what is going to become a component and what isn't, and what's going to be like a wrapper component and what isn't. And it's like that way of architecting things feels good. And it's not that I can't take some of that knowledge and just do it in Vue also for various reasons, fine, you know, especially because I don't really have to give up my angle brackets. I'm just in HTML over there and things just are handled a little differently. But I don't know, it's just starting to, it just feels good. And it feels like, you don't need me to say it, this ship has sailed. Like component driven development is already the way everything is built these days, you know, like for, except for, you know, that feels a little bold because there's still plenty of people knocking out PHP rendered WordPress apps for half the web or whatever. But, you know, even that stuff is starting to slowly move towards more of a JavaScript rendered world.
Yeah, I agree. I ever since like the year 2016, I've seen people like, oh, this is the year that like React dies and like goes away. And like, I just heard that eventually it'll be true, right? Because it's always true. But like, yeah, I don't know. I've just been hearing that for a long time now, and it's still doing pretty good. So,
what happens to your life if React winds down or some, you know, or do you worry about that kind of thing? Too many eggs in one basket? Or are you just gonna?
I 100% do. So I actually don't love being like the React guy, for various reasons. All the trade offs are pretty clear. Like, I kind of just want
to
be
we'll have to change our episode title. React guy, Tyler McGinnis.
That's fine. I'll take it. No, the reality is that's who I am right now. That's fine. Like, I love it. Okay. Obviously, it works out well. Just in the future, I wouldn't mind. Like for example, if I had like a, I really wouldn't mind having like a Vue course. I just don't know Vue enough to like have a really good course on it. Like, that's my fault, right? Because I really like React, and like React has been changing so much lately that like I don't really have time to do anything else but React. But yeah, it's definitely like, if you're looking at it from like a business standpoint, like my business has grown as React has grown, and I'm definitely not naive to that. It's one of the things where like, I guess my actions speak louder than my words here, but yeah, I really, and that's why I've been so like, I think Vue's great. Svelte, obviously people are loving it. I try to be very like open with my mentality about like front end frameworks because it's just such like a silly thing.
You know, what's funny is that you had some experience, you're saying, in React Native at apps and stuff. Like, you came at it. It's not like it's teaching in this world is so tricky because if you never do any other work, that you're like pass card to teach it starts to like fade away a little bit.
100%.
Not like that you don't have the right to, because if you're some incredible teacher and you're in that, you're probably will always be good at teaching to some degree, even if you're a little behind on stuff, big deal. You're still a good teacher. But like, this stuff changes so fast, and so like your ability to teach it is so much stronger if you're doing it too, that you like don't have the choice. Tyler McGinnis can't teach all five major JavaScript frameworks with equal quality because you just don't know them all. Nobody does.
It's so true. Yeah, it's so true. And I think, and that's what's kind of nice about doing the business thing too, is like, there's always something. Like, I just built like an analytics dashboard, and like I've built like a business dashboard. Like, there's just a bunch of internal tools you can build to solve the problem. Like, hey, I haven't built something in a few weeks. Like, let me do that. And that's really what's nice about it is, especially like teaching stuff on the interwebs, is like there's always something else you can build. And that just happens to be like the thing that you're teaching, which is nice. So,
yeah, I think this happens not just in the education sphere, but I mean, even like work, right? Like, you know, you get paid to work on some Java system, and we've probably said this on the show, but then you like look up and you're like, whoa, everything's different. And I had no time to learn the new things or chase a different technology, you know. And I think chase is kind of the right word, because you really have to like, no one sits down at a computer and is like, I understand Vue. I read one tutorial. I'm a professional now. Like, I'm putting it on my resume, you know, like you really have to like learn. You have to like build maybe multiple things before you're like, oh, I kind of get it. I understand this and why it's better than this or different than this. And I can make valid comparisons. That's hard stuff. That takes time. I wish, I don't know. I wish our industry was less go, go, go sometimes, so we could have more time to like evaluate those things. But
yeah, you kind of just have to be like content with it. Like, I'm not going to know everything. And like, even if I have a lot of Twitter followers, that doesn't necessarily give me the right to think that I know everything. Right. Like, and that's why it's like, I'm the React guy right now, and that's fine. I don't want to be in the future, but like, that's who I am. And like, that's really all I can do right now, because like it's just been changing so much. So I'm in my bed now. I got to sleep in it. Which is fine.
Well, but it's the thing. It
pays your bills. It keeps the lights on. And so like there's inherent risk in like being like, you know, I'm not doing it anymore. You know, like what? Like you can't, like my wife was not cool with that plan. Yeah, you know, yeah, totally. Like when I said I want to switch to video games, she was not cool with
it. Yeah. I can't be a professional streamer, unfortunately, a video game streamer.
Yeah. So. I said, honey, Twitch, it's cool.
Look at Ninja. Said, look at no. Booga. He just won $3 billion. Yeah.
He has blue hair. I can do that.
Hey there. This episode is brought to you by WordPress.com. Whether you want to share your ideas, start a business, or run a store, you can do it all on WordPress.com. Maybe you're like me and you've set up a lot of self-hosted WordPress sites over the years. And it's great that WordPress gives you that option. But sometimes you don't want to have to worry about servers, infrastructure, backups, and cron jobs. You just want to start a website now, and that's why you should check out WordPress.com. You can open a store, process payments, configure taxes and shipping, build a marketing plan. You make the widgets, they'll help you make the website. You can start a blog, make your mark online with the world's greatest blogging tool, and join a community millions strong that's waiting to hear what you have to say. You could design a portfolio. Thousands of themes means there's a layout that's just right for you, while storage and design options ensure you can upload anything you need and give your work the stage it deserves. You could build a fan base, promote your products, use advanced statistics and SEO tools, and connect with built-in audiences on social media to grow your business. You can start it all today on WordPress.com for free. Whether you want to create, share, or sell, do it right on WordPress.com. Our thanks to WordPress.com for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
I kind of want to talk about, like, for lack of better way to phrase it, like, you know, this will be the fighting words, is like CSR versus SSR kind of thing, even though there's kind of a spectrum of that and it's kind of more interesting and nuanced than that. I feel like React kind of like just avoids it entirely, right? They're like, oh, you want that? There's some people that do that. You know, like you can just, there's a way, you know, there's ways, man. Just look into it, Google it. Is that fair? Or like it seems like there's so much benefit to that, and there's not a lot of, like, does the React core team care at all about the SSR world?
So they will. I actually had to look up CSR. I'm assuming you're going for client side rendering.
Yeah, just right? Like how React normally works, like the entire documentation of the entire project, and then server side rendering.
Sure. I Googled it. I just to make sure, and I got corporate social responsibility. So I assumed that wasn't what you were going for there. So SSR has been, it's my longest blog post and my longest video. I think it's like 48 minutes or something about doing like SSR and React. And it's just a nightmare. And there's promise of like Suspense coming out, which is like the new way to do like data fetching and stuff with React. And with that, supposedly, I haven't followed it too closely, but supposedly SSR stuff is supposed to get like way better.
Really? Because, I would have thought it would almost been the opposite. I think of Suspense as like show spinners under these circumstances, the API.
Well, it's a more dependable way to show spinners, right?
Sure.
So like you could send down a somewhat pre-rendered machine, but then the parts that have to go fetch data could
So I can see that. So it's going to make this easier somehow.
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. And what's nice is like right now, so I use Gatsby for a lot of my stuff, which isn't really like SSR. It's more just like,
well, that's the default answer. Like I want to write in React, but I know enough that there's benefit to server-side rendering. So Gatsby
or Next. Exactly. Or Next, exactly. And that's usually my answer. Or it's like, go read my 48-minute blog post where at the end I say like, I don't know if this is worth it, but thanks for reading. Cause like,
that's like my college calculus professor, like 3 months in. Yeah. Hey, I don't know. I couldn't solve it. Okay. Next
problem.
There's just some unchanging details about it that are a big deal. Like Google has a video that says like, listen, if your app is entirely client side rendered, kind of don't worry because we're still going to index it, but we literally are going to take a week to index it. Like we're telling you to your face, it's going to take a week, and not only a week to index it, but it's going to take a week every time you change it to us for us to find those changes and re-index it. Yeah. So it's kind of like, okay, well, Google told you that to your face, so maybe we should solve that problem.
Yeah, I love that answer too, because it's like, okay, so what do I do? Like, so it works kind of, anyway, yeah, I use Gatsby. That's my solution.
Sure.
It's a very, again, not strong opinions here. That's just that's how I solve the problem with all my very heavy content sites. So
it feels nice too, because it's SSR, and then it has this whole concept of hydration, right? So you're not stuck in SSR forever. Eventually the library loads and client-side rendering takes over, and it starts feeling good again in that way that SSR or client-side rendering does. And I like that feel. I'm really attracted to it. You click something and like the minimum amount of data comes across the wire and this fancy browser side thing takes over and re-renders just what it needs to. And it kind of feels great.
It's the right idea. Like it feels right.
It does feel right. Except for that, then there's all these other things to consider. Like, okay, so I've rendered some shell of a page and all these buttons are all of a sudden going to be replaced by like JavaScript powered, like it's going to intercept the clicks and do different stuff with it. So while that rehydration is happening, I have this button that it doesn't work, and there's like this weird middle ground to it. So it's like the hydration isn't like this perfect answer, right? There's downsides to it too. It's not like we've nailed this yet.
Yeah, it's the right TLDR where it's like, hey, look, we could have the best of both worlds. Like, don't worry about the implementation. Just like, no, that like it sounds good, right? And then you actually do it, and you're like, wait, how do I actually get like I like data on the server too. Like, how do I hydrate that same data? Oh, I put it on a window. Like, okay, that works, I guess. And then, it's weird. I'm told it's going to get better, so I'll trust it.
Okay. That's all we can do, I guess.
Yeah, that's all we can do.
It is weird. Not weird, I should say. Oh, well, y'all just said weird, so I just said weird. I repeated what you said. It's an interesting design choice to like offload server-side rendering to like a third-party company, you know, like
100%. Yeah,
React has kind of said we're not solving that exact. You have React DOM rendered a string, but we're not really going to solve it. So, here, you know, now third-party companies can come in innovate here. That's an interesting position for a framework for like such a. I would call it maybe semi-necessary feature. But I think I've also heard the argument like Facebook has 1,000 engineers who can solve that problem.
So you know, this is happening from the other side too. You got Google saying, wow, that blew up on us. I don't think we can just sit here and do nothing about it. So they're not, I don't think. I don't think they've said what they're going to do about it, but it's going to be something eventually.
What's interesting, too, is that same idea can be taken over to React Native, because a lot of the React Native development is done by Expo, which is like a weird, I think they went through Y Combinator. I shouldn't say weird. I keep saying weird. They're not weird at all. They're great. But it's like a lot of React Native is done by like an outside company. I don't really know. I've never gotten a clear answer of like the distinction between Expo and Facebook and like how Expo gets paid, because like I think they went through Y Combinator, so which means they took VC money. So it's Facebook's shown that they're not afraid to outsource pretty important things to other smart people, I guess. I don't know,
because that's a feature of React. Like, why did you choose React? Oh, because we have native products, you know.
Yeah,
and you're like that's I guess the difference between Preact and React is one thing is just that. Preact kind of just, it's smaller by using just native quick handlers and stuff like that. And React needs an abstraction layer so that it can go to React Native or wherever. So,
yeah.
So that's interesting that weird slash interesting, I guess, to me from a framework standpoint that like, you're like React Native is like a core feature. This is one of the reasons you choose React. By the way, we're going to let another company just kind of run with it. you have to go talk to this other company to actually do that.
Yeah. So. And like in their defense, like a lot of the Expo, I think almost all of them are like former Facebook employees, I think. So it's like, but I mean,
I'm hearing about it for the first time. I have no idea what you're all talking about.
Expo is the way I think about it is like it's a layer that sits on top of React Native kind of that just makes a lot of things easier. So, and I haven't done it React Native in like a year or even more now. But back in the day, the example was like you can, like getting started with an Expo project was way easier than with React Native. Even like the simulators were easier. Like upgrading was easier. Doing like authentication was easier because they just had a bunch of like built-in stuff. So you didn't really have to worry about like all like the plist and all of those like native iOS or Android things because Expo was just a really nice layer over that. And then the argument
is funny. It's funny to think about because you're like, oh shoot, I thought that's what React Native was.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. And I think like by now they may have solved some of those issues. But yeah, I don't know. Like I see React Native and Expo pretty much hand in hand at this point because they're like so intertwined, which isn't a bad thing. It's just kind of the way it is. So,
but in the same way, like React technically does server-side rendering, but you should probably just use Gatsby.
Exactly.
If you like want to actually get it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I just find these kind of interesting choices.
Yeah.
It's like we care about server-side rendering now because of the way that browsers work and that it's just faster and it's a faster rendering path to have some HTML sitting there on the page because the parser looks at it and can do stuff with it immediately without having to make additional requests for data that are prioritized in different ways and all that stuff. So that's kind of what I was getting at earlier, is that if the browser just decides to change that and they're like, oh, you know what the fastest way to build websites is? Just throw us a bundle and we'll parse through the bundle like we're a little Webpack and grab the most important stuff and we'll render it that way. And that's actually the fastest way to render a website. That would change everything. That would turn everything on its head, you know, then be like, oh, it turns out JavaScript is the best way to build a website. I mean, I don't see that happening overnight or anything, but it's funny that like it's not some holy truth that a client-side rendered app like that's, you know, pre-built HTML is the way to go forever. It's like if so many people only build in this way going forward, browsers aren't going to have any choice but to kind of prioritize the rendering path of JavaScript apps. It'll be weird.
I have heard like a lot of the gains have been made. I know there people are working on it, and Nicole Sullivan's been doing a lot of bridge work between like the React team and the like browser specification stuff. So so I know it's definitely getting better, but I have heard like the V8 blogs and stuff, they've made some few improvements, but like they're kind of also saying like, or broadcasting like we made it about as fast as it gets.
Okay. So I was curious if that's
anything after this, like there's no big optimizations or low hanging, you know, these are all going to be micro things or new APIs entirely, but like we haven't, there's not a lot of juice to squeeze out. So that's sort of what I've seen advertised. And we're also faced with the other problem too, is like phones are and laptops are getting slower. Like the Mac like CPU is getting better, but the way they're like managing thermals and throttling and stuff like that, like the CPU isn't super much better than like its 2015 counterpart on a MacBook Pro, you know? So and that's maybe claim chatter. You can bust me on some science, but there's devices are prioritizing battery or they're prioritizing like a better camera, not so much like a better CPU. So
the time to sit back and just wait for things to improve around us is over, is your kind of vibe there? Like,
yeah, I mean, on it, like Moore's law is kind of dead now. So the CPUs don't double every generation. So that's where we're at. So phones are going to get cheaper and cheaper, like inexpensive, except for I'm sure everyone here has $1,000 phone in their, you know, pocket right now. But like, that's not going to be the face of phones in the future. So there you go. Bummer. Sorry. No bummers.
I just realized that the quotes on the bottom of your page, like a lot of people have like four quotes on the bottom of their page that says, I love these courses. Tyler has like 1,000.
That's actually, this is an interesting topic because, and if you go, it's kind of what I optimize for, right? Again, I mentioned this at the beginning where it's like, I just try to make really high quality stuff and sometimes it works out. Like my reviews page, I'm waiting for someone to like, be like, you teach this, but your reviews page like sucks at performance. They would be 100% true, but it's kind of like a marketing thing where it's like, there's so many reviews that the reviews page sucks. And like, I realize there's like other things I could do to fix that, but it's kind of like it's a statement page. I don't know. That's probably terrible. Cause like there's people who like from other countries who don't have like crazy internet. Now that I'm saying this publicly, but anyway. That's the way I think about it.
Is it bad performance because every single one of those tiny little images is a separate request?
No, it's all a sprite. give me some credit, right? So,
well, then how bad can it be?
It's really long. Like, it's a huge, I don't like paginate anything. It's just like a really long page. So I don't know. Comparatively, I guess the other parts of my site are pretty quick because of Gatsby, but like the reviews pages, it's like, here's a bunch of like pictures and quotes and stuff.
Yeah. It's probably the avatars, the gravatars.
Yeah, I think it's like a rendering problem, not necessarily like a network problem.
Yeah, that's probably not all React's fault. That's probably more like a.
So where's the value? You know, like, do you see, like, is Instagram like too early to tell? Is like YouTube a good seller for you? Like, or can you track a bunch of your sales to Twitter?
I can track stuff. So YouTube is big for a lot of people. I was kind of late to the YouTube game, so I only have like 15,000 subscribers or something. But if you look at like West Boss, like Code with Mosh, there's a lot of like super big YouTube channels. And I think that's where most of their traffic comes from. Where most of my traffic comes from is just like blog posts, like SEO, to be honest. Instagram, almost nothing, because like that's still kind of new. Twitter, a lot comes from Twitter, but nothing crazy. Like it really is just like word of mouth and like SEO is my two big ones.
And you kind of write your long form blog posts and then you roll out a video, like the video version of that, right?
Yep.
So you kind of like, you, I guess, maximize, even though it's a lot of effort, I'm sure.
Yes.
But like you kind of like, okay, if I went through the trouble of writing all this, I'm just going to make a YouTube video that also talks about this, right?
Yeah. And it kind of goes back to like, there's different mediums. Like some people prefer the medium of like a slideshow lecture where I'm talking to them. Some people don't want to hear me talk, which is reasonable. And they just want to read a blog post, right? So it's like, it's just optimizing for each one of those individuals. And it takes a long time. Cause obviously like they're not, a lot of people think they're just like copy paste kind of things because they're the same content, but it's really, I try to change up the way just because again, different mediums, different approaches. And so I don't know, it's worked out so far.
How about the newsletter? Is that a good driver?
It's pretty good. I'm not as active with it as I should be. But what's nice about the newsletter is it's like the only channel that you really like kind of own until Google changes that. But hopefully that's never an issue. For example, like Facebook, if you want to like target all the people who like your Facebook page, you have to like pay them now. Instagram probably will eventually be the same way where it's like not everybody sees your Instagram post. Twitter is kind of the same way too, unless they have like the option turned off, right? Where they can decide who sees the tweet based on like certain metrics. Where the newsletter, at least for right now, most of the time it like goes to everybody who signed up. Hopefully Google doesn't change that in the future, but I don't know.
That's wild. It's like you want to talk to
somebody. Thanks for joining my platform, building up your audience. You wanted to talk to them. It costs a few bucks.
Thanks. I mean, I'd be interested, Chris, CSS Tricks, where's I assume it's like content, right? Like your blog post is like your biggest.
Well, we're just like a publisher. So the only money is sponsorship and advertising, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, and I don't even sell anything on like traffic really. It's mostly just like, I mean, it is to some degree because you have to have a certain level of traffic for anybody to be interested in doing it at all. Mm-hmm. But at some point then it's just like trust and like working directly with people and saying like, I can help you spread your message. Here's how much I'm going to charge you to help spread that message. Yes or no, you know?
I actually think we sponsored something this week. I don't handle that side of the business. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you probably don't either, which is why neither of us know. But I'm pretty sure.
Extremely awkward that you sponsored my thing and neither one of us know.
I'm almost positive. Yeah, I'm almost positive. Actually, yeah, because I saw the. I remember looking at it. Someone sent it to me. An employee sent it to me. It was like, hey, does this look good? And it was a CSS Tricks thing. So I think we're sponsoring a post or something. Anyway, next topic.
No, hey, I think that's actually
nepotism.
Kind of funny. This is great. It's because you care about different things. Like I have limited time in the day and I outsource some of that stuff too. And I do look at everything. So it's not, I saw it at some point and decided that it was cool. It's just not as top of mind as it could be. And I spend the time, like I spend my time this morning. I spent a bunch of time working on a blog post that I thought would be really good. So I'm like, oh, this is good. I'm going to roll with it for a minute. Or I spend time like strategizing the future of what we're going to do or talking to partners involved and stuff. So it's not like I'm not involved, you know, I'm super involved. I just Nah, I just don't know exactly what happens on an hour-to-hour basis. Yeah.
That's probably good, to be honest.
Fun. That's, I was, you know, it's just fun to talk about stuff like that, because it's like, sometimes it's cathartic to just know that everybody's just winging it a little bit and just kind of guessing that the choices they
everybody's
make
just
good.
Making it up as they go. That's my thing. Yeah, we're all just kind of figuring it out.
Just because it's been something Chris and I have been like talking about, I feel like on multiple shows. Like, was there a point where you're like, you know, I'm going to sell something? Like, how were you, you know, I guess, how did you decide it felt good to make the jump to be like, I'm going to just sell a course?
Yes.
I'm going to quit my job, record YouTubes for whatever, you know, 3 to 6 months, and then I'm going to like launch a course, and I'll do that for the rest of my life. Like, how did that happen? Or like, what was the like point of confidence?
So I was doing, as I mentioned, I was doing Egghead videos at the time, and I love Egghead. Again, nothing against Egghead. I just didn't love, again, because I'm so long-winded. Egghead is like the opposite. No fluff, like get to the point. Like, we got 4 minutes, get it all out, right? And to me, that was, especially because I was coming from in-person teaching where I have like, you know, hour-long lectures, it was a little bit limiting to me. And there was a side of it where it's like, I can like, one, they're making me good money. So that's like, it's a fair trade, but like they're making money off of me, which again is their business. Like, that's what they do. It's totally fine. But I was like, I wonder if I could do this. One, I can get out of like the bite size space because I just don't love it as like a medium to teach. And two, I can kind of just do my own thing and see if it works out. And so that's really what I did. At the time I was doing React stuff on Egghead. This was 2015, I think. And I was like, I wonder if I just like make my own course. I'll make it free because I don't really have an audience yet. And I wonder if like that'll work. And so I did. And then it was like the perfect timing because like React was starting to become a thing and there really wasn't a course out on it yet. And so it was free. So it was like front page of Hacker News for like 2 days, which usually is kind of a scary thing. In this case, it was like, for some reason, they were all really nice. So anyway, that was kind of like my big break where I decided to do it. I made the first React Fundamentals course free. And then that kind of really set the foundation for everything I've done since. So.
It's, you know, some of that serendipity of like something that you're interested in and something that's growing and getting bigger.
Yeah.
And that people are interested in stuff like that. I almost feel sorry for people that are like really super passionate about like something quite obscure. And then you're you just got rolled the bad dice there. Cause like you should probably teach that because that's your passion. And like teaching something that isn't your passion is like never going to feel as good as something else. And I don't know what to say about that.
It's one of those things where it's like luck is kind of like probably like 80% of what I do. Like it just so happened to I really like React. I had a lot of really good people kind of in like friends of mine who were like, hey, React is going to be really cool. You should check it out. And so I did, and I was teaching, and then like the Hacker News thing happened, and it was just like all just a weird, very lucky coincidence. And yeah, I've since built on it, but yeah, I don't know. And I feel like that's kind of how our whole industry is with like all the, like the developer boot camps. Like we're all just so lucky that people like, and like writing software is like a thing that like is valuable, right? Where like you can have like advertisers on your blog and like you can do all these different things because there are like businesses being built on what we do. So I don't know. Very, very lucky.
You know, it's almost the opposite of startup sometimes. You know, it's a lot of times in an early phase of building a business, you don't pick on passion always. I mean, sometimes you do, but you almost always look at the market and the potential of that particular market. And if it's too small, you don't do it. You look for bigger you know? And I think some people just get a kick out of that anyway. Like they don't really care what they're going to build. They care about making sure there's enough people that want it.
Yeah.
But you get to have it both ways.
Yeah. Just very, very lucky.
All right. Yeah. I think it's a good time to wrap it up. Thank you, Tyler, for coming on the show. For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that?
That's really why I'm here, to get as much money as possible to maximize. No. I am Tyler McGinnis on Twitter. That's probably my DMs are open. So that's probably the best place to find and chat with me.
And then, of course, you got courses available over at TylerMcGinnis.com. So,
that's it.
All right. Well, thank you. Do you have a other URL for courses?
That's it. TylerMcGinnis.com/courses, technically.
There you go. All right. Well, cool. And thank you, dear listener, for
downloading this in your podcatcher, just be sure to start our favorite up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Shoptalkshow.com.